From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm John Wells.
Our guest, Dr. Jeffrey Rosenbluth, is the founder of TetraDapt at the University of Utah's Rehabilitation Center. Jeffrey is a professor of spinal cord medicine, and through his work at the university, he partners with the colleges of mechanical engineering, computer science, architecture and planning, business, and health to design cutting-edge technology and provide essential programs that improve the quality of life for individuals with disabilities. Today, he and his team will be demoing his new biotech innovation, the TetraCraft. And last winter, he had the TetraSki on the slopes. He says it's a paradigm shift for those with disabilities, and it's groundbreaking work to advance technology for people living with complex disabilities. Jeffrey Rosenbluth, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you so much.
TetraDapt, this is this little engineering zone within the University of Utah Rehab Center that you founded, and I first found out about you last winter with a Tetra ski for adaptive athletes, and now you're back with the Tetra craft that you're demoing on East Canyon Reservoir today from 10 to 2. And boy, I almost don't know where to start. So why don't we start with today? Tell us about the Tetra craft.
So it's a Tetra watercraft, and so this is a modified Hobie kayak/sailboat. And so we take an existing hull and watercraft, and then we modify it for use for folks with fairly complex physical disabilities. And so the whole word tetra, meaning four, meaning that all four limbs are affected with some degree of paralysis. So these are individuals that really couldn't use any type of typical watercraft. And we've modified this with motors for steering and motors for sail control, and that enables folks to be able to use other input devices like just their mouth and breathing and switches and joysticks to be able to control the boat just the same way you would be able to without a disability.
So what was the genesis of all of this? Because I know the Tetra ski is very much the same, where they're controlling with their mouth or even blowing, be able to direct the craft, whether ski or watercraft. Where was the void that you saw in adaptive technology that turned on a light for you and made you know the direction you wanted to go?
Sure, yeah, it goes way back to the 80s. And so I actually in college got involved with teaching adaptive sports and adaptive skiing before I went to medical school, and you know, really saw the impact of these sports. Went all the way through medical school and to my position in rehab, and then really kind of went back to sports again because it's just such a powerful thing. There's so many people that are injured whose identity is wrapped up in a lot of the activities, the hobbies, the sports that they do. And it seemed like from my time back in the 80s till currently, there's been, you know, some technology that's been very impressive, but in many ways, some of the technology has left behind people with more complex injuries. And we have a lot more tools now to address that and a lot of areas that I thought we could still improve. And so we really started to specialize, I would say, in that most complex individual that there really wasn't anything out there on the market for them to participate or participate at least at the same level of performance and independence as everyone else.
Getting on the ski mountain, getting on the reservoir or the lake is a job in itself. So let's talk about that. But before we do, the Tetra watercraft looks like a Hobie cat, and they can use either joystick or mouth controlled for independent control of steering, sail management, and in this case, electric propulsion as well. So you have a configuration that doesn't necessarily use sails. It's just electric propulsion.
Correct. Yeah, that's why we at least for right now, we're calling it a watercraft because it's not just a kayak and it's not just a sailboat. It can do both. So I think if you're a power wheelchair user and you want to go kayaking, you know, kayaking would be with power. And so mm-hmm. that was kind of the thinking behind that also. And it's pretty nice on a non-windy day to still be able to take out the boat and have a great time. Or certainly when it's too windy and you really can't use the sail when you're trying to maneuver in through the marina or to come to the beach. You can still independently take this boat in any conditions with the power part of it, into and away from shore as well. So every part of the experience can be independent.
That's the Tetra watercraft. And then you have designed, built, and deployed a powered accessible docking system, PADS, PADS, to sort of maximize your access to the lakes and the reservoirs. Can you tell us about that? That's quite an apparatus.
Absolutely. So I think you're starting to get into our thinking pattern, which is really just to pick away at every little issue that's keeping people from participating. And so, you know, we really didn't like the lack of ability for individuals, you know, with disabilities to be able to even use boats, to get on boats, or even the process of getting into our Tetra watercraft involved, you know, multiple people and transferring from a chair to the boat. And so we thought there must be a more elegant way to do it. And so we had the engineers at the university help us design it's relatively large. It's 30 feet by 8 feet. And it looks a lot like a patio boat. It's a large platform that's free of obstructions, and you can maneuver on a wheelchair. And there's a rolling ramp that rolls from the shore all the way onto the boat. And so it's like ADA access to the boat. And then once you're on there, all of the other boats can be accessed. So there's a side lift and a back lift, and we can bring the smaller boats into the mothership, into the big boat, and do a very easy level transfer from their wheelchairs to the boat, and then really gracefully drop people down into the water with these electric lifts, and then they're off and going with their electric boats. And so it's just this really beautiful, graceful, seamless experience that hasn't really been seen before.
When you say it hasn't really been seen before, and it's the world's first, same as your sit ski, the Tetra ski, especially because we're so closely associated in Park City with the National Ability Center, we've seen a lot of different types of or adaptive technology and things like sit skis. But what makes it different? You know, did you have people coming to you, like the National Ability Center, saying, how do we get one step further?
Yeah, this is mostly driven from our patients. And so my primary day-to-day in and day-out job is the physician for individuals with spinal cord injury. And I've been out here in Utah since 2001, and we've developed an adaptive sports program over the years. And I've had some patients come to me directly when I encourage them to participate and say, you don't actually have something in your program that I would enjoy. And so I challenge you to design something. I've had a number of patients tell me, I would be happy to play with you guys if you could design something that would be fun for us. And so that was really the motivation behind it. And looking into the gear that was on the market already, it really didn't accommodate. There definitely are products where you can take someone with a very significant disability and put them on the water or put them on the hill. But it's very dependent. It's a very dependent activity where you're highly at the mercy of the instructor to help with steering and speed control and all of that. And it's that element of independence, of autonomy and performance that I think people are really motivated by.
So you had a great piece on a national news program about the Tetra ski last March, I think it was. And you were featured in it along with a skier who had, I believe he was involved in a ski accident and became a quadriplegic. Is that right?
That's correct.
He loved to ski, and he hasn't been able to since then. And it's a very emotional piece, really. It's incredible and very inspiring. Was he an example of a patient that said to you, you know, if only I could, ..
He actually wasn't. He just assumed that he couldn't ski.
Yeah.
And so he didn't even know enough to suggest that he, you know, he'd want to get back out there again. And so he was really surprised. He didn't really think the technology would be available that would give him a similar experience. And he was almost, I would say, even a little reluctant at first, you know, to think of it as something that would be give him that same thrill that he had before. And that was the biggest surprise to him and to us, is how exactly the same it is to the skiing that he was doing before in terms of all those sensations of gravity and cold and wind and just the beauty of being outside.
So for our listeners, you have the power accessible docking system, which allows them access to the reservoir or to the lake. You have this boat that can be sailed or or it could also have electric propulsion, and they have independent control of steering, but you just don't let them go and do their thing. You're watching them from the shore because I believe you have some sort of wireless remote control. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, great. Glad you brought it up. There's a lot of safety systems. We really don't want anything to go wrong, and we recognize there could be some failures in the system. So for some of our folks, let's say on the watercraft, some of them are actually on ventilators, and we're actually out there in the boat with them, and you know they're freely sailing and doing what they want, but we're there as backup. For some of the folks that don't need as much close medical attention, we actually have this wireless remote system. It looks like a lot like a PlayStation remote control, and we can be on a personal watercraft or another boat and just be close by to be able to take over if there was some sudden gust of wind or they lost control or even the sip and puff device maybe even fell out of their mouth and they couldn't control it. We could just safely bring it over to us and help out in that situation. And that's available for the ski also. So there's an instructor that does go out on the lesson, and there is actually a tether that's connected just in case there was some catastrophic failure in the system. But the idea is to really never need to use the tether. And there's a remote control system in case someone puffs instead of sipping or sipping instead of puffing. And, you know, we need to quickly control their direction before they go over anything dangerous.
Lynn and I both enjoy skiing very much. We enjoy the craft of skiing. It's fun. It's good exercise. But we really love the independence and being out in these extraordinary mountains here in the Wasatch System. And we both independently watched on your website the video you had of all these different angles showing the skier coming down the hill from the perspective of the person who was tethering him, from the perspective of the skier, from off on the side watching the whole thing. And it's just great that all sorts of different people that have now not had access can get out there and really experience it and have some fun. And I didn't have a question there. I just wanted to say that.
Absolutely. And as someone that I go out quite a bit with these folks too, and it really is great. I mean, from being behind the ski and watching how gracefully it carves these wonderful turns, and it's just so, I mean, skiing in general is a graceful sport, and, you know, with significant disability, sometimes it's hard to get back to kind of graceful movement, and I think the ski and the boat, honestly, you know, offers that again. So I just love watching it. I love watching the different conditions, whether it's hard pack or even deep powder. We'll put on some wide skis. You know, we can go off-piste. We're in the trees. And I'm surprised every year now about the places we're going and the things we're doing with this mechanical ski.
It's so interesting, the similarities between the watercraft and the ski. But I'm wondering, can we go back to the blowing and the puffing and the sucking?
Yeah.
And how does it actually transfer from your puff into, you know, I know that it has the mechanical ability to go up on an edge on one side. And can you give us a little layman's perspective there?
Sure. We basically had the mechanical engineers and computer scientists at the university create basically the computer that sits in between, you know, the motors that are on there. And so we're just interpreting breath, and that's blowing out or sucking in and doing that in some kind of sequence. So it could be blowing out twice in a row or breathing in twice in a row or breathing out and breathing in single or double, any kind of combination, almost like a Morse code. And what we'll do is we actually have a simulator, and we'll have our students run the simulator and actually help decide how they want to turn right or how they want to turn left or how they want to control the motors on the sailboat, and we can map that to the real device in real life. And so we really take people's personal preferences of how it's more comfortable to breathe in and out and then set that up to control these complex devices.
That's incredible. So if you're someone who likes to make short slalom turns versus big arcing GS turns, you could set it up for that.
Yeah, you can completely dial in the performance of the ski. And for beginner, we do that actually now. Yeah, we actually have a beginner and an advanced mode, so the beginner has less options. The actuators on the skis move a little more slowly, and then we give people more and more control of the ski and their wedge shape and the ski angle and how fast the ski moves as they get better.
Just want to mention your website. It's tetradapt.us. That's TETRADAPT.
As our listeners go to the website, those that aren't driving, and they take a peek at some of the videos, and you show the person who is tethered from behind. I guess you would call them the instructor. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. What are the requirements to be an instructor?
That's a great question. So we have thought so much as the ski leaves us and the mothership. We really want to make sure that it's safe. We have people that already have these complex injuries, and we do worry about making things worse. And so we're actually bringing instructors in and doing a four-day, very solid training for people who are already adaptive ski instructors. And we're going through all the different safety aspects and the methods of tethering, and it's also often difficult for people to grasp, you know, holding onto a rope and onto a remote control at the same time that you're trying to ski and they're trying to ski. And so it's really fun, but it's complex, and it just takes a little bit of practice. There's about 17 instructors that have been certified now in the United States.
And when you go skiing, it's not just an instructor and the person in the sit ski. A third person is required at a minimum to operate that hinge to be able to get the person up on the lift. Is that correct?
It depends on the weight of the person. So someone really 160 pounds or less, it really is fairly easy to go out with just one person. But it's overall probably best to go out with two folks together. And oftentimes it'll be a main instructor and maybe a family member or a friend or care provider that'll come out also, because that's a big part of what we do, is really try to encourage everyone to do it together. And we'd also like to make the instructors the parents or sons or daughters of the person in the ski, and have it be, you know, much more of a family affair and an independent thing that doesn't need us at some point anymore.
Our guest is Jeff Rosenbluth from the University of Utah's Rehab Center. And Jeff, I want to mention before we let you go, because you've got to run off here to East Canyon Reservoir. Again, it's today from 10 to 2. I guess it's a demo, or you've got some athletes coming to try out the craft?
Yes. The gentleman that you mentioned before that was on the Today Show will be up there. And we have another gentleman, Dustin Godnick, who actually lives up in Park City. Actually, used to live in Park City. I think he just moved down to Salt Lake, and he'll be up there as well. And both will be demonstrating the Tetra watercraft today.
And because it's a media day there, chances are, you know, with radio, we can only go so far with audio and not video. But chances are tonight on the local news, you'll see some great video of the event. So that's really exciting. And before we let you go, I just wanted to ask you about the support that you get at the University of Utah for bringing these types of things to market to enable their existence, really. And I learned about you first through the Center for Technology and Venture Commercialization that I know that you worked with. So could you just give us an overview? Because I think a lot of people don't know about that.
Yeah, I think there's been a little bit of a transition in academics to, well, a lot of times when people had great ideas, they would take those ideas and they would spin those and become a company and leave the university. And, you know, my dream was to continue to be working at the university and building new products and innovating and doing that with the students and the different colleges throughout the university. And so the university has been incredibly supportive of helping us to form this company, Tetra Adapt Community, which we needed to form to be able to actually bring these products to folks. And so far, the way we've been able to do it is with other grants. And so we actually haven't sold them yet. We've used these grants to subsidize leases to be able to get them to other programs, because we recognize it would be a very expensive device for a lot of programs. So we're really trying to troubleshoot not just the device itself, but how other programs can acquire them and how we can use them efficiently and spread them to all of the programs that need them. And the university has been incredibly supportive, not just of helping us build the company to build them, but also the staff here to do the training for all the new instructors and to get these skis out there and to really test them.
Right. Jeff Rosenbluth is the founder of TetraDapt at the University of Utah's Rehabilitation Center. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio, and it's really exciting, promising work that you're doing, and best of luck today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show and for your interest in all of these Tetra products. I really appreciate the time.
All right.
Best of luck,
thank
Jeff.
You.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio. If you missed part of the show or you want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab.
We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcasts, so you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name.
So look for KPCW Cool Science Radio and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.